40 years ago today, the city of Philadelphia did something unimaginable. On May 13, 1985, police dropped a bomb on a row home on Osage Avenue that ignited a fire that killed 11 members of the Back to Nature group MOVE, including five children. More than 60 homes were destroyed. I sat down with investigative journalist Lynn Washington, who reported on MOVE for five decades. He was on the ground that day, and he's the voice behind the new podcast, MOVE, Untangling the Tragedy. I started by asking him why he thought it was important to look back for this milestone.
One of the myriad of issues involved with this whole MOVE conundrum is that no one has told the whole story or attempted to tell the whole story. May 13th, 1985, with the extraordinary deaths of five children, six adults, and then burning down 61 homes, rightfully gets attention. But it's not like May of 85 just popped up like mushrooms after a rain. There's a history that developed that. So that's what we wanted to show.
I want you to try to explain for people who haven't heard of MOVE what the organization is, because it's really complicated if you've never heard it, if you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say in some ways it's more convoluted than complicated. And to give you a succinct answer of what MOVE is, I don't know. They've been captioned as a back to nature group because they eschew technology. They had their own philosophies and opinions, if you will. Those ideas came from their founder, a guy named John. Well, he took the name of John Africa. His birth name was Vincent Liepert. So essentially, they were against the system as it is.
I never thought that revolution consisted of revolutionizing myself to get away from the things that caused me to want to revolt. Said it was only till I joined MOVE that I learned what true revolution was all about.
Well,
about hard work, about activity, about the absence of all those fashions and facades and labels.
They wanted to change things to a more primitive sort of lifestyle.
We lived like it was 1800s, even though it was the 1900s. We chopped wood to burn in a wood stove to heat the house. The children didn't wear clothes. You know, we were outside in the wintertime. I mean, I remember being a kid in the snow with no clothes. We swam at Copps Creek Park. We swam in the creek in February.
Which may be good if you want to live out in the country, but if you're living right in the middle of an urban area and your lifestyle, for whatever reason, right or wrong, attracts rats and roaches, and you say, well, we're not going to kill any of those because we believe in the sanctity of all life, that's probably what gives the complicated nature of this, because they projected themselves as a black revolutionary group. But for the better part, they were making war on black people throughout their whole existence.
And you guys have compelling audio of MOVE members on a loudspeaker, for example. You have voices of neighbors talking about their homes being overtaken by bugs.
We exterminated all the time, you know, until it got like the air was like heavy with smells of extermination in our house, and it did no good. And my kids, it got so bad. My children woke up in the middle of the night from bug bites, crying from things biting them in their beds.
People can't really imagine that this was happening in a middle class community in West Philly.
Right. On Osage Avenue, MOVE had a strategy to put pressure on their neighbors, essentially, as the MOVE Commission report said, to terrorize their neighbors. And the neighbors will put pressure on city officials to get relief from MOVE's terrorism. And that relief, from MOVE's perspective, would be to get the release of their members. They were adversely impacting their neighbors with trying to accomplish something that they wanted.
When we go back to that day, May 13th, 1985, you know, take us to that morning, because you arrived at a certain time, right?
Right.
And you were actually three blocks away when the bomb hit. But before that happened, Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Maida Odom, who gave you guys some really amazing audio for this, she had been there.
Mm-hmm.
And she witnessed some things.
Can we make a run for that house, Officer Lewis? 1, 2, 3, go!
The Philadelphia police, in anticipation, or should we say preparation, for what there was going to be their eviction action on May 13th, 1985, had evacuated the block. Maida was there. She saw that. Luckily, they left the house a few hours before the city initiated its eviction activity at 5:30 in the morning. Good thing they did, because shortly after that morning, there was a shootout. The police fired 10,000 bullets into the move house. 10,000 bullets. There were so many bullets being shot around there, they were falling out of the sky like hail. I put on my motorcycle helmet and I tried to, as much as I could, to crawl under a car to try to stay away from all these falling bullets. Later in the afternoon, as things turned out, I was assigned to just be stationed right out in front of the city's temporary command center. And where I was sitting, there was a helicopter in front of me, a state police helicopter. And I had heard about an hour and a half earlier from a reporter that they were going to drop a bomb on Move's house. Now, I had been covering police brutality in Philly at that point for 10 years, so I knew what the police department was capable of, but I just could not countenance the fact that they were going to drop a bomb on this place. But sitting there going through my notes, I look up, there's three guys walking out. All of them are armed. One of them has a submachine gun. Another one is carrying a green satchel. And I said, oh, my goodness, that must be the bomb. I saw the helicopter take off. I saw it circle the neighborhood. Then I hear an explosion, and it was of such intensity, it literally, I mean, you could feel the ground moving.
Let's take a careful look at this. 5:27 p.m., state police helicopter drops it. There is the explosion. As you can see, a very dramatic explosion that occurs 30 seconds and really rips into the Move compound.
But I still didn't realize or accept in my head that it was the bomb dropped on Move's house. I thought it was a gas main had blown up. I started moving closer to Osage Avenue, and then you could see the little whiffs of black smoke coming up. It was like, oh, there's a fire on Move's roof. And then from there, you could see the intensity of the fire change from a little bit of black smoke to the thicker yellow smoke. And then you could see the flames literally jump along the roof line and then across the street. And one of the disconcerting things when watching this fire spread is that the firefighters were standing there doing nothing. But what we didn't know, and what the firefighters didn't know, is that the police commissioner had ordered the fire commissioner not to fight the fire. The police commissioner made a conscientious decision to use the fire as a tactical weapon to drive the Move members out of the house. Unbeknownst to too many people, that as Move members tried to come out, they were experienced gunfire, and they drove them back into the house. Now, the police officers who were stationed in houses on Pine Street behind the Move compound vehemently denied that they were shooting. We heard gunfire, both single shots and a few bursts of automatic fire. Now, where that came from, if the police weren't shooting, we don't know. But we do know that some Move members did try to come out, and they were driven back into the house. And the commissioner, William Brown, even remarked specifically on this point. He said that if, in fact, no Move members were shot at, why is it that police munitions, gunshots, were inside the bones of Move members that were recovered from the house after it was destroyed? It was just a surreal scene. By the time night fell, the fire was so intense, it looked like noon, although it had this really eerie orange glow from the fire. So you're looking at this, you're doing your reportage, but it's also having an emotional impact on you.
I look at your face when you talk about that moment that the bomb dropped and just being there. How has you witnessing this changed you?
It's changed me in a way that I try as hard as I can every day to be the best reporter that I could be. But it also, just the enormity of what happened, it was how the system could not deal with this group that was intent on doing everything it could to undermine the system. It's just been painful. And I'll tell you, when we were doing this podcast and we were doing the episode about that very day, May 13th, I became so overwhelmed that I shed the first tear in 40 years. It's not like this didn't affect me. It did profoundly, but I never shed a tear. And doing that retracking of that episode, I just was overwhelmed with emotion. In fact, I had to apologize to my executive producer, Yvonne Laddie, who wrote the piece. You know, we're there in her office doing this recording, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to shed a tear. You know, I'm supposed to be a macho man, but it finally came out after 40 years. So what I thought was an incident that rolled off my back like water on a duck, it really stuck, and it finally came out 40 years later.
Was it a relief?
No, because the underlying issues, one, the double standards of justice still exists, and two, you know, seeing today how the viewpoints on this issue, I think, have been perverted. MOVE lost the battles but won the war. They're now seen as this revolutionary group who practiced environmentalism before it was popular. That really wasn't the story.
What was the story?
They were not this black revolutionary group. I mean, they self-proclaimed, but much of their revolution was against the very organizations that they claimed to be supportive of or fighting on behalf of. Because people only focus on May 13th and the ugly thing that happened to the organization. And that's a rightful focus, but it shouldn't be the total focus.
That was Lynn Washington, investigative journalist and narrator of the new podcast, MOVE, Untangling the Tragedy, produced by the Logan Center for Urban Investigative Reporting at Temple University and the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's available now at philly.com/move. This has been a Studio 2 Extra from WHYY. You can catch me and my co-host Avi Wolfman-Arendt live every Tuesday through Thursday at noon on 90.9 FM or streaming on YouTube. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered today's extra. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer. From Studio 2 in Philadelphia, from WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for listening.